Welcome to Seagull Eagle, the podcast where two rivals meet.
A rivalry so raw that it should come with a health warning, just like this podcast.
This week at Brighton, the Seagulls showed we can finally be consistent and proved a two-goal lead is just a creative way of getting a draw.
And this week at Palace, a dismal midweek Carabao Cup clash with Millwall ended in penalties. And in a twist that no one saw coming, the shootout didn't ruin our night. We beat West Ham away, we were fourth in the league for a while, and we're all nervously waiting for someone to wake us up.
Plus, we'll preview a double game week for the Albion and a tricky home tie for Palace.
This is Seagull Eagle.
Hello, Andy.
Neil, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Not too bad. My throat's a little tight, so I might sound a little Barry White at the moment. But
I thought you just had a little bit, you know, like when you get a bit upset and your voice goes a little bit.
You started early.
I thought that might be what it was.
Wow.
No?
Have you had a good week, Andy?
It's been all right, yeah. It's been all right.
Good.
Two games again this week.
Yeah, you had a busy week, really.
Yeah. I think you're on two games next week, aren't you?
We are,
but it was our turn this week. And I'll be honest with you, it's been a long week, and so much so that when I was prepping for this pod, I completely forgot about the Millwall game because it felt like a million miles away. But should we start with the West Ham Palace game?
I think we should. I think as it's the most positive game of the week for us, so let's start with that one.
For
then,
us?
Yeah. Well, any of us, yeah.
Positive the Palace won for a Brighton fan.
Oh, no, between us as a podcast, it is.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely
West
right.
West Ham 1, Crystal Palace 2.
Yeah.
How was it, mate?
Well, look, London derby, obviously this time against West Ham at the London Stadium. Mm. And let's be honest, even the West Ham fans don't like the London Stadium, which is just a ridiculous situation.
So true, though.
Oh, mate, honestly, I think the only good thing about that place is the leg room. And that is true, isn't it? Like, if you have a look.
I mean, the ball boys have to catch a bus to give the ball back, don't they?
Oh,
I mean,
mate,
it's unbelievable.
They absolutely do. And also, I think, you know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? I think the attendance for this Palace game was like 60,000. And they had numerous empty seats. All you could see was empty seats on the TV. So it's a crazy situation. But anyway, we digress. Lineups. Adam Walton was back.
I noticed this.
Which,
that's a little early, wasn't it?
No one was expecting that,
right,
to be brutally honest. Because don't forget, obviously, he came off injured just before the international break, just as he got called up for the international break.
Yep.
So in essence, the irony of it all is that he pretty much just missed the international break, poor guy, after getting his England call up. So, and he came back and he, whilst he wasn't on top form, didn't look like a man who'd been, you know, sat down with his leg up for 2 weeks, which was good. So he only missed two games, and great to have him back, especially because obviously Sarr is still injured. And you know my views on Sarr, which was, you know, Sarr is my preference over Eze, Kamada or anybody in that kind of attacking midfield role.
Well, he fits the style so perfectly, doesn't he? That's the thing with
him. Quietly cracks on, mate.
Have you got any idea of how long he is going to be off for now?
I think he's still out for a good few more weeks.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, right. I think he's going to miss the Dynamo Kiev game. And I think probably early into next month, I think, now.
Yeah, okay. So probably after the next international break that comes around so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, so how did this go then?
Yeah.
These two games that I watched this week were not what I have now become known to class as a typical Palace performance, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I felt less comfortable watching them, less assured that nothing nasty was going to happen.
Right, okay.
And more frustrated, I think, than I have been watching your average Palace game over the last couple of months. And that sounds all very negative, especially when we're talking about positive result.
You got 3 points.
But that kind of isn't the case, though. But I guess what I'm trying to say is we did our job here, and we also did our job at Millwall, right?
Yeah.
But you can go to work, but sometimes it ain't pretty.
Yeah,
and
okay,
these two games, for me, weren't particularly pretty, and it very much showed that we've got a different lineup, especially in attack, and that they're still bedding in.
So explain to me this generally from a perspective of this game. West Ham obviously coming into this in terrible form. They're trying to scrape any sort of results together at the moment. What did the game sort of generally play out like? Were West Ham trying to defend and stay deep? Were they trying to go for it? What did it look like?
It looked like a little bit like two teams who kind of, it was that ridiculous situation I felt in the first half where two teams who had the ball didn't particularly want the ball or right. feel comfortable with the ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And whilst I know that West Ham aren't typically your Palace or your Forest in that respect, they do play like that sometimes. And I think that the... Yeah, it definitely felt like neither team felt comfortable in possession. And I think that's kind of what is probably the easiest way to describe that game, where it didn't flow beautifully. There was moments of brilliance where you're like, oh, yeah, final
yeah, yeah,
pass.
Just not quite. Oh. Yeah, okay, I gotcha.
And I felt like there was a lot of, certainly a lot of our attacking players and a lot of the new ones coming in felt like it was their time to shine, and it clearly was not with the final ball. So anyway, look, we did our job though, and I think we just need a few more weeks actually to polish it off. But luckily it hasn't gone to pot. We've just lost the cherry on top, I think is probably what I'm trying to say. I think, look, first half, we played well, and I think all in all really controlled the game. I think there was an early chance for Kamada. Pino was playing, and him and Kamada, I think, look, they created good chance in attack, but there was no final product in that first half. And
sure.
I think my beef with Pino at the moment, bless him, he's in game three. So he really hasn't had time to probably kind of get used to this, let's be honest, really complicated and thorough system that we play, right?
Yeah,
everything
I agree.
Relies on everybody. Yeah. There's so many levels to it. So I think he's got a bit of time that he needs to really settle in. But I think most importantly, I don't really want to focus on this too much because it is early days, but I think Pino is finding out the hard way what it's like to play in the Premier League. Yep. And even when we were playing a Championship club, he was getting chucked off the ball. He was looking for fouls that clearly weren't coming.
He's still in his head, like, you know, you've got to realise as well, from an early age, he's been playing in the Spanish league.
Yeah.
Very, very
He's been a one club man.
Very different league, you know, and the referees and everything around the games are very different.
Yeah.
So it's going to take him a little while to adjust, even if it's just around the diving or the, you know, the strength that you need to have this sort of game in the Premier League. So it's going to take him a while.
I think, you know, it's that, funny enough, it reminded me because I was in the park this morning managing my kids' football team. Mm. And you see it so often because, like, I mean, they're 13-year-olds, but some of them are still 12 technically playing for this 13s team.
Yeah.
So you've got kids that are genuinely half the size of the kid next to him.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Is that what Pino's like then?
And that is exactly what reminded me of that. You know, like, I don't know, when my son was basically taking out the attacker who was half his size.
Yeah.
And the attacker just went flying like a balloon across the park. And that was what it was a little bit like with Pino.
Okay.
He just wasn't expecting people to be that physical, that aggressive.
Sure.
So got a bit of work to do there. But skill-wise, great.
Mm.
He's just... If Pino had scored every goal that he had a shot on target for since he's joined the club, he'd have about 10 to his name. And that's the point. So he's been a little bit unlucky.
Yeah.
But also, I think he's just, we're not quite there yet. But
no
one turns up really ready to go.
No, like you say, early days.
Yeah. So that all being said, I think Mateta got us the early lead after what can only be described as probably a reasonable goal scramble from a corner.
Mm.
It was his third goal in two visits to West Ham. Not bad.
Yeah.
Right? West Ham then, I think, after that had a couple of reasonably good breaks. Chris Richards and Pino made two brilliant challenges, and they were. There were some really good tracking back. You know, and I think this is what I mean about this whole kind of didn't sit there as comfortably as I normally do, going, it's going to be fine. Mm. There were a few moments where in my head I was like, it ain't going to be fine.
Yeah.
We haven't got this.
Okay.
But then that final tackle still did come in. So the team spirit's there, but I think we're just lacking a little bit of the making it click sometimes. Then we got to halftime.
So Mateta, when did he score? Because he scored the first goal. What time was that? It was quite close to half time, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think so.
Well, look, 37 minutes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, look, mate, it was 35 minutes worth of which way is this going to go, to be brutally honest. But it did look like we had the better bit of it.
Got it. Okay.
It was like, is it going to be one of these games where we're just not going to score?
Right, okay.
Nil-nil, do you know what I mean? Which is what we had with Sunderland and all the others. So then at halftime, Pino was substituted, get this, due to a knee injury.
Oh, see, I saw the substitution, but I didn't know why.
Well, if I'm honest with you, bear in mind what I've just said, I thought that Glasner had done what he's done with some of the other players, mate, you ain't playing the system, my friend. You need to learn a lesson, which would be a bit harsh.
It would be.
He was his star signing. What has actually been put to light now is that he's come off with a knee injury.
Oh.
Yeah. So they don't. He was going for an MRI today on Sunday.
Sure.
So we'll find out,
probably,
I guess,
in the next couple of days, yeah.
But Glasner didn't seem to think it was too serious. More of a precautionary thing to come off. So he was replaced by Deveni.
Okay, yeah.
Who, whilst, again, from the under-21 team, you know, like, this kid's on the way up.
We've talked about him a bit, haven't we?
We've
said, like, he just needs the opportunity. He's had a few ins and outs with the team. He's had opportunities here and there, but...
Oh, and this kid's got some balls, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he steps up, takes the best penalties under the biggest pressure. He's scoring goals for his country.
Did he get on Saturday?
Well, mate, when he came back in, it almost felt to me, and probably a lot of the Palace fans might disagree, mate, because you're missing the creativity of Pino, nice moments, them like, wow, little flicks, you know, all that. And then you put back on Deveni and also Lerma at that kind of time, just after half-time, Lerma came on.
Oh, okay.
And them two players, just like they did at Millwall, just steadied the ship, man. Like, that was ship, by the way, just to clarify if anyone... so they steadied the ship. And they got that system flowing again. Lacroix had a good chance from a Wharton cross and absolutely batters the bar. That should have been 2-0, right? Then from pretty much nowhere, West Ham get a corner. After a couple of like half-hearted efforts and the odd break here or there, Jarrod Bowen got away from Wharton, and Wharton self-admittedly was like, my bad. My fault. And completely unmarked, obviously, Jarrod Bowen headed in the equaliser, which is a real shame because I did feel a little bit like, but also my head was like, that's probably going to happen because of the way we were playing. Very un-Palace goal to concede. If you look at all our goals that we concede, very rarely is it someone that we've just left wander to have a free shot. Anyway, the final 40 minutes saw what I believe to be a much improved West Ham side, where I think the stadium started getting behind them a little bit as well in there, which is a rarity in that place. And there was chances from both sides. I think it was a much more open game, right? Got to go for winning.
It's funny you say that. I was going to actually say this. I've written it down that I noticed that myself, that because I've rewatched some of the game.
Yeah.
And you're right. As soon as West Ham, it was almost the worst thing that could happen for West Ham, because as soon as they got the goal, tails were up and they were like, we're going to go for this. Which obviously plays into Palace's hands.
Absolutely.
Because suddenly now, the team that was going to sit back are attacking. And lo and behold, what happens? You've got gaps in behind for your counter-attacking style. So
opened up all the spaces for us.
It was such a weird sort of thing to happen. But ironically, the goal helped you play better.
Yeah, it did. It did. And it was a goal that just so much did not need to happen as well. But And then on 69 minutes, a very unlikely hero emerged, Neil. Very unlikely hero.
Yeah.
Wharton looped this lovely ball in, and Mitchell, lo and behold, found himself in a prime position in which he normally manages to hit the corner flag or a car in the car park at this point, because he gets excited. We all know that, like, we've spoken about this together before, where this is the guy that was a right back, and he's very much ended up in this kind of attacking position, which involves him somehow finding himself in the box, right? It's just not got a history of doing that. But anyway, look, great position that he was in, and he volleyed it on his weak foot, and it was a hell of a goal.
It was a sumptuous finish, I have to be completely honest with you. What a hit, mate. What a hit. With his wrong foot, as it were.
Yeah, on the volley.
What a hit on the volley. Like, just, even I was sitting there going, that's lovely.
Mate, even he. There's a picture on the Palace website in the match review, and it shows Mitchell's face after he'd hit the ball. And he was like, you could just tell him, he was like, oh my God.
The most surprised
person. I
think
I've done this. And then even in the tunnel after the game, all of the, he gave his shirt away to a fan, and all the Palace players are ribbing him going, you should have kept that shirt, mate, because this is probably the only time this is going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
All that kind of stuff. His first goal for us since May, and I'm really pleased for him because, to be fair, he's one of the most highly rated defenders that has adapted his positioning, and he deserved that because he's got himself in that position so many times, and that's going to give him confidence now. So hopefully, and funny enough, in the second half, he nearly got a chance to do it again, but he reverted back to type and ended up in the car park. And that's quite an achievement in that stadium. Anyway, Nketiah's back as well, which is interesting.
Yeah, he got on the pitch, didn't he?
He got on the pitch, and I wasn't I wasn't a hater, to be fair. He came back. He hasn't been involved in any of the pre-season at all. And I thought he looked quite lively. He kind of played behind the attacking positions.
I was going to say this.
Attacking midfielder.
That was what was interesting, I think, because actually, rather than replacing Mateta, he was playing with Mateta. And I think that's a very different position for him in a good way. I think that uses his skills better.
Yeah, I wasn't a hater. The only thing that I picked up on immediately, in which I think I had a cup of tea in my hand at the time and only threw it at the television, which is like, guess what? He was on for 5 minutes and what did he do? Got into the best position ever, offside. And you're like, dude, you're a professional, man. Like, you've been on the pitch for 5 minutes. I promise you now, you watch a game with Nketiah in it, he's offside. If he plays a full 90 minutes, easily offside two or three times a game. And you're like, how is that a thing? Do you know what I mean?
That's not
how
good.
Is that a thing? But anyway, we held the lead. Secured another 3 points on the road, which is wonderful. And as I said earlier, it just didn't feel quite as simple and structured. Even Glasner said the same thing here, really. Got a little bit of a quote here, Neil.
Yeah.
He says, my only criticism was that we didn't kill the game when we could have.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, we should have gone 3, maybe 4-0 up at one point.
Yeah.
There were many positives to take, but still a lot of potential, and that's good. We deserved the win, and we could have made it a bit easier. Which I guess plays into what I've just said, right? Yeah. Which is, it could have been, a lot easier. As for West Ham, Neil, I feel like they kind of helped us here. I mean, when you do a protest with 3,000 people protesting before the game, the team are under a little bit of added pressure there. Potter's only won he's only won 6 of his last 25 matches in charge, right? 6 out of 25. And obviously the Palace fans, and this is awful, right? Because I'm not all for this whole kind of whole crowd against one person thing, but there was a little bit of humour in this, which was like the Palace fans were chanting, "You're getting sacked in the morning" to Potter, which I always find a bit like, it's a little bit much because that's someone's career.
Yeah.
And then of course the West Ham fans joined in. They joined in, Neil. So you got the whole stadium from both sides.
That's when you know, mate.
I mean, wow. And of course, look, as for Palace, here's a fact for you, which will make you laugh.
Yeah.
We've now won the same amount of games at the London Stadium as West Ham have. It's a good stat, isn't it? We've won 2 games in 2025, as have West Ham.
That's so bad.
I know, mate. It's awful, isn't it? And just Palace and Liverpool remain unbeaten because I believe Chelsea lost.
They did. Yeah. Man weekend. United beat them this weekend. So it's only two remaining.
And obviously that stat could take an absolute battering one way or the other because Liverpool are up next for us at home. And I know you hate this stat, mate, but I feel like
it's going to keep going, isn't it?
Well, hopefully.
You've got to talk about it.
The national, I don't believe that the media and everybody else is really giving this the credit it deserves. Because it's like 17 matches unbeaten now in all competitions. And to make that stat even more impressive, something that I didn't realise, we've only conceded 11 goals in them 17 games.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's utter madness, mate. And as I said, 10 of them 17 games, Neil, were not pretty. But that's how you progress, isn't it? That's how you win things and you get up there. And obviously, I'm aware that things change and potentially have changed since we're doing this podcast. We were fourth in the league after that win. I believe we've now dropped down to fifth because of Bournemouth's latest result.
Yeah, that's right. So you're fifth on 9 points behind Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham and Bournemouth on 10.
And it's mad. So you think about that. We went to the London Stadium and we were on the coach on the way home in the Champions League spaces after 5 games, mate. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. So great day to be alive. Lovely for Palace fans. Probably all going to go wrong as of next week's, which is why I've gone double down on the stats because I don't think we're going to get to 18. Genuinely, truthfully, unless we can get a draw out of them.
I mean, the one thing I'm clinging on to as an Albion fan is what we talked about right at the beginning of this season, which was the fact that you've obviously got a busy time ahead of you when it comes to, if you stay in the League Cup, obviously, if you are, obviously you're in the Conference League, got Premier League, et cetera, et cetera.
Could be 60-something games, I think.
There's going to be a lot of games over the next, in particular, over the next 3 months until Christmas.
Yeah.
That is going to obviously have a huge impact on your squad, of which isn't the biggest to start with. So I'm hoping that might help you stop talking about your unbeaten run. That would help me a little bit. But look, I have to be honest, You've done everything asked of you at the beginning of this season. As a Palace supporter, you must be so happy.
Oh, mate, look, Neil, one thing, and I know it sounds braggy, but it's really not, right? This is about just progress year on year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you look at it, this time last year, Palace was sat in 16th, no wins and three draws.
Yeah. No, look.
Right, five games in, we're now sat fourth, fifth, two wins and three draws. And also, what you were saying, and what I was also saying, if you go back to the pod and listen to our early season predictions, the fact that Palace had one of the hardest starts out of all of the teams.
Sure, yeah.
And also, we had all that palaver with the Kaz and the UEFA. We've also had like our biggest player leave. We've got a small squad, probably not the most successful transfer window. And yet, all that with two games a week, injuries, and we're still outperforming where we've ever been at this time of year. Do you know how I look at it, just to sum it up? We are nearly a quarter of the way to that first goal as a Palace fan, and I know I'm going to get slated for saying this, but we're a quarter of the way nearly to the survival, and that's after five games. Do you know what I mean? Because we're going to need that banked.
Yeah, yeah, no, I
when
get
it
you.
Starts getting hard over Christmas and no one's fit. And like, so if it continues, brilliant. But I look at it as the contingency bank is being filled up right now. And that is a great place to be.
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it, mate.
Yeah.
I'm so pleased for you.
I know. And anyway, Brighton fans, you can listen again now. And we're going to talk about your day out now. Oh, in fact, it was at home, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Back at the Amex. Back at the fortress that is the Amex.
Well, it is, isn't it?
Well, it's not bad. Yeah. No, actually, to be fair, I shouldn't make fun. We're pretty okay at the Amex. You told me a stat, actually, didn't you?
Well, you've lost. You're unbeaten in seven games at the Amex. And that was something. And again, it's not a dig because obviously I sit here and listen to you kind of get a bit annoyed sometimes about all this. So I kind of thought that you had lost a few more games than you had. But no, you're unbeaten in seven and you've lost one in 10 games at home. The last game you lost, do you know what that was at home?
Go on.
Villa 3-0. Oh, and that was in April, mate.
Yeah.
I mean, that is technically a fortress, isn't it?
Yeah, look, we do okay at home. We really do. And to be fair, going into this game, I mean, I even said it last week, I wasn't expecting too much. I didn't know what to expect, but I also, the way we've been playing and everything that we talked about last week, I was thinking, well, Spurs are on a bit of a high. They're doing really well. I mean, I'd be really happy with a point, I was thinking to myself.
You did kind of say that, to be fair.
I did. I would be happy with a point. And therefore, I should be happy, Andy. I should be happy. Yeah, don't spill your coffee. I should be happy because we drew 2-2, and that's not a bad result against Spurs in the bigger picture.
The result's all right. It's the way round it happened that brings the sour taste in your mouth, isn't it?
It does. Yeah, more than that, actually. And I'm not going to harp on about the 2-0 up and we end up drawing 2-2. I've talked on end about it last season. It's been a similar thing that obviously keeps going. So I'm not going to keep going on about that. We all know what the problems are. And it doesn't seem to be getting any closer to solving it. So that's that. What I would say, watching that game on Saturday, it was one of the strangest Albion games I've watched in a long time. And I know that's a strange thing in itself to say, but what I mean is the game, we were 2-0 up after, I think it was 30 minutes, I think it was. I had no idea how we were 2-0 up after 30 minutes.
That's interesting.
Because it didn't feel like we'd deserved to be 2-0 up. It felt very different. And let me go into it a little bit, right? So let's just... We rewind for a second and just talk about the lineups, okay? So just to give everyone a really sort of clear idea, Maxim de Kuyper obviously got injured last week, getting pushed into the hoardings and stuff. The good news was that he wasn't as badly injured as first thought, and he was touch and go as to whether to make this squad. They decided just to leave him, give him a week off, so he should be back next week. So that's one good thing. In his place came Ferdi Kadioglu, who replaced him last week. So Ferdi got, I think, about 85 minutes. That's really good. And he was my man of the match. I thought he was excellent, specifically against Mohamed Kudus. On a one-on-one sort of defending perspective, I thought he was really good, and he was really good in possession. So that's a bonus from my point of view, and that was one of the big changes for the lineups. The other changes were Jorginho, Rutter and Gruder. They basically did what they did at the end of last season in playing sort of like two false nines up front. So there wasn't really a striker. Both Jorginho Rutter and Gruda sort of took turns playing up top or dropping in the hole, or both dropping in the hole and expecting the wingers, as it were, to sort of cut in and go forward. So it was a really sort of fluid front four as such in that sense. So they played up front. Simas was on the bench again, which was good news, as well as the other good news, which was Mats Wiefer was back after his injury, back on the bench, and he got on the pitch just last few minutes of the game as well. So I'm glad that he's back. That's another bonus for us. Now, as I said, on the surface, it looks like, you know, another 2-0 up and we didn't win. And factually, obviously, that's correct. But if I'm honest, I don't think we deserve to be 2-0 up in the first place. It was just one of the performances that I haven't seen in a long time from Albion. And what I mean by that is, I think the team clearly had a specific tactic. They changed the way they played for this particular game. And that tactic was to play fast, direct, counter-attacking football.
Okay.
You know that tactic very well, Andy.
I do.
They, like, almost nearly every time that we had possession, Albion had possession, we wanted to play it long behind Spurs' back line. And to be fair, the first goal, just like 8 minutes in, was exactly that concept. We were playing around with it, just very quick passing, and then Rutter straight over the top. Tottenham's high line was pierced by Minté, one-on-one, straight down to the keeper, round him, straight in.
That was a great goal, by the way.
Such a good finish.
It pains me to say it, but I did watch that a couple of times on the replays, and yeah, I'm superb.
It's just,
that guy's dangerous, right?
He is. He's getting better and better every week, and that's the one big bright spot of this whole sort of run so far, is that Minté has been easily, I would say, our best player through the whole five games so far.
I've got a stat on that if you want it, if it's not going to throw you off.
Oh, yeah, go on,
mate.
Go for it.
Can I ask you a quick question first?
Yeah, go on.
What did he have on his shin pads?
No idea. Still can't see.
Right.
I haven't seen a picture. No, the camera's got close enough, so I haven't been able to see it yet.
I mean, we're giving this guy compliments, but if he's going to, like, celebrate with something on his shin pads, he needs to realise that shin pads are too small for that.
Yeah.
But there we go.
Totally agree.
Yeah. No, the stat that I've got is that apparently he's got the highest take-on success rate amongst all players in the Premier League this season. Minté.
Oh, really?
65%.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. I mean,
that's a hell of a stat. When you think about your team like Brighton, like in terms of where you are in the league as well with your results, to have a player who's the highest success rate on take-ons in the Premier League, you'd think it would come from Man City, Liverpool or whatever, but that's a hell of a success rate.
I agree. And he's definitely been our brightest spark of the whole season so far.
So I said something nice about a Brighton player. There you go.
Thank you, Andy.
I'll let you carry on. Sorry.
Don't give me charity. Look, I think because of that tactic, it felt like we were a bit disjointed, specifically to the fans watching, I think, because we didn't want the ball. And that's very unusual for us. We weren't wanting the ball as much as we did, as we usually would, you know. And it's just not what we're used to. And I think a lot of people were looking at it thinking we're just playing badly. But I really don't think it actually was that. It was just a clear tactic. We wanted the ball quickly, and as soon as we got it, we looked long over the top to either the wingers, or we were playing it really quick along the ground to our centre forward-ish, one of our players that were playing up there, trying to get hold of it. And I think we probably did that one tactic probably too much, personally. I would say it was too far the other way, where it felt like we were just doing that one thing all the time. But our two goals were really good goals, first of all. You know, the first, as I said, being exactly how probably Hörsler was trying to practice in the week, and it worked out really well. And then the second one, well, that was a bit of an anomaly, because like half hour mark, Spurs were mostly in control. They were playing really well, I thought. They had most of the ball and they were passing really well. But this particular moment, I don't know if you saw it, but we just put pressure on in that corner.
Yeah.
Bergvall gave it away because we had three or four players around them. It fell to Yassin Ayari, another bright spark, by the way. Another player who I think, it's not many of them, but I think he's had a really good season so far. Mm. He took hold of that ball, took a bit of a pot shot, but he caught it perfectly. I mean, you see the replay of it. You see the ball isn't spinning. You know, it's one of those shots where the ball is like static through the air, which means he must have caught it really, really well. Goalkeeper, he went to dive and then suddenly realised it was going the other way and sort of moved back the other way. And 2-0 up. And I'm sitting there after 31 minutes going, what's just happened? We're 2-0 up against Spurs and I don't really feel like we've played that well.
Mm.
And again, you've got to think back, we are, as Brighton fans, we are quite used to now being a possession-style team who are focused on keeping the ball and playing tiki-taka or keeping, you know, to suddenly have this, what felt like a very different feel. And as I say, a lot of people probably thinking we're playing badly. I don't think we were. I think this was just, we don't want the ball. We're going to kick it over the top.
So what did that look like, Neil? Because I'll be honest with you, I'm struggling to understand that a little bit. Because what I saw, truthfully, I did think you were playing badly. I didn't think it didn't look to me like a tactical move. I mean, so from your respect then, if you're saying you didn't want the ball, so what does that look like? That looks like so not pressing.
I'll give basically. You, yeah. So no, we were still pressing because any way that we can win the ball higher up is better. But what I'm talking about is Brighton has a knack of we want to get control of the game. So once we've got the ball, majority of the time for us is we will hold the ball across the back three or four players, pass it into midfield, come back, side to side. We will wait endlessly for a particular opportunity to arise and then we will play a quick ball.
And when
in.
You do, you move at pace.
Exactly.
And it's impressive,
but
right?
But what we bypassed in this game was that possession.
Right.
So what we did was when we had a goal kick, where we would normally maybe play it over to the right back who's high out on the wing, and then we'd cut back. So we normally cut back and go across the back four and keep hold of the ball for a few more passes and see what happens and see what opens up. What we were doing this time was very much passing it, so the goalkeeper would have it, pass it to one of our centre-backs who would immediately look for one of our forward line, either running in behind or coming short. And if we were coming short for it, for instance, Jorginho Rutter or somebody, his first thought, again, wasn't keep hold of the ball. His first thought was pass it straight off to a winger who would kick it over the top again. Yeah. So there was this constant idea that we would try and get hold of it and go. And that happened in a bad way for the third goal that went in, Spurs' first goal, because we tried to have the ball in midfield and we immediately, I think it was Yari, turned to try and get forward, tried to immediately to move forward and pass the ball off. And he got caught.
Yeah.
Belaber did the exact same thing, got caught. They were all in that little area where they didn't want the ball. They were trying to get rid of the ball as quickly as possible. That was the tactic. And it just felt very un-Brighton, I felt.
So you think that the coaching staff have had a look at Tottenham and gone, that's the way to get ahead.
They're
not going to expect it.
I get it, mate.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for explaining that.
That's my opinion of it. That's what I thought looking at it. I don't, you know, when you look at individual players, I think we were asking players, young players, to do things that were quite different. And so there was going to be a little bit of a hit and miss with certain things. Like, don't get me wrong. There are ways that Herzlia plays generally. There are instances of quick play, of instances of long ball, but this seemed to be literally every time.
Yeah.
So it felt a little bit disjointed, as I said. Look, we go in at half time and we're 2-1 up somehow, right? And I'm perplexed, I have to be honest. I felt like I was watching a different team entirely, not Brighton. It just didn't feel like them. Belaber's taken off at half time. So Gomez comes on in his place. And it's a surprise, but I wouldn't say it was unheard of because I think he was hit and miss. Like, his first half wasn't great. There were flashes of his old self, though, which is a good sign. But it's still not the level that he's achieved last season. And I'll talk a bit more about Belaber later. The second half starts right, and let's be honest, it's a repeat of the first, really. Spurs, if anything, are better in the second half, and they really take control of the game. We can't really get a handle on it at all. And Spurs are making more changes and getting more and more attacking. So they're bringing even more of their better players back on because they swapped a few out because they had the Champions League on the week, in the Wednesday. So he brings on like Xavi Simmons, he's brought on Johnson. There's quite a few attacking players on the pitch now and we're getting a little bit overrun. So it gets to about 75 minutes, I think. Hörsler brings on Coppola and Welbeck. Now, so what he's doing now is he's changing the shape again and he's going five at the back. And it was a real solid five as well at the back. And he's putting two in midfield and then three up front still. He's still trying to keep the wingers going up front. And, you know, it was okay. We had a couple of out balls where we tried to get it out and we tried to sort of get an opportunity from it, but nothing really happened. And we're sitting there with this back five and we're just letting the pressure push on us. But to be fair, Spurs didn't actually create tons of chances in that last 15, 20 minutes. So it sort of worked. Now, people will laugh at me for saying that because obviously they scored. But what I mean is when you look at the actual overall play, the tactic wasn't a bad tactic.
I get it. The intention was there.
Yeah, but we just didn't account for Van Hecke getting a deflection off his knee and it going into the net.
Oh, it's a good goal, to be fair, from Van Hecke there. I mean, technically he scored three, right? I mean, if that was the other end, that'd be great reactions.
It was a lovely finish. Yeah. So, you know,
they get the equaliser. If that hadn't have gone in, I still think it would have been an undeserved 3 points. Don't get me wrong, I would have taken it. But a point is a point and we move on. It is a frustration. Of course it is, Andy. You know, and I don't know where to start, really. Look, yes, I'm disappointed. Yes, we lost a 2-goal lead. Would have taken a draw before the game, so can I be that disappointed?
Just from a Palace's fan perspective.
Yeah, definitely, go for it.
I was keeping my eyes very closely, Neil, on your game. I saw that you were 2-0 up, and I was thinking, how the hell? Like, obviously, bearing in mind I wasn't watching your game, right? So I was thinking, 2-0 up, this is interesting. And then when I saw Tottenham get that goal back... Mm. The first thing in my head was, there's no way they're going to keep hold of that lead. And I don't know why, but my brain, and I've got limited knowledge on Brighton compared to you, right? But what you've taught me from this podcast was that Brighton don't keep hold of that lead very often. No. And if there's a goal coming back, in my head, that was how it was going to finish, actually. And funny enough, the media... And the reviews that I've seen online of that game, Match the Day, all the other bits and pieces, I think the general consensus was that Tottenham would have been a bit hard done by if they hadn't got something out of this game.
And
that actually probably they do feel quite hard done by even with a 2-2 draw.
Yeah.
But we all know that that's not quite how it works out. So, one question though, Neil. Mm. I heard at the end of that game, when I watched the replay, I heard boos. Was that the Tottenham fans?
I didn't hear boos.
Or was that the Brighton fans?
I have to be honest, I didn't hear boos. I think there was obviously a little bit of a groan just right at the final whistle because it was like, oh, right, okay, we have drawn. But I didn't hear boos.
Not trying to create a story at all.
Maybe, I don't think
maybe
I heard
go online and listen to the review again because there was a... It wasn't like a West Ham boo, but there was a considerable amount of discontent.
I mean,
could have been the Tottenham fans.
No, I don't think it was them. I don't even think... If you did hear them, it wasn't many people. Maybe they were just right by the commentator. I don't know. But it didn't feel like that. I think people are obviously frustrated and they're a bit upset. Yeah. I think some of the biggest talking points that I've seen after the game about different things are, one, belabor, and two, Hörsler, and just generally, what are we doing? What's the overall plan? How are we going to play? All that sort of stuff, which I don't think we've got time for now. But
well, let's talk about belabor then. Because he was subbed off.
Yes.
And the general consensus was he was subbed off for a reason that he didn't particularly hit the heights that he's hit before. I think you referred to that. So what is going on with this guy?
Well, we talked about it a little bit, didn't we, last week? And I thought that maybe Hörsler was sort of giving him a stick rather than a carrot and sort of saying to him, look, come on, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. Now, interestingly, after the game... Obviously, Fabian Hörsler was asked about belabor, and there was quite a long... For anyone that wants to read it, I would suggest you go to, I think, the Evening Argus, the local paper online, has a really good little article about it and explains, has all of the quotes in full. But let me give you a couple of the quotes, which I thought were quite interesting. So Hörsler says, he's a very young, talented player. He needs help. He needs support from us. He needs the right environment where he can grow. He tried everything today. He pushed, but he only had 45 minutes in his body. That's something we have to accept. It's something that we can't feel, i.e. how he's feeling. We can't feel that. Why he's only playing 45 minutes, we don't know. I think it's very important to understand that he's a young kid. He needs support from us, and he will get back to his... shape when he will get back to his shape where he was, but we need to be very patient with him. We need to give him the trust and support he needs, and then I'm sure that he will be back to shape and be a very important player for us this season. And then he goes on, because he then says about, you know, was it your decision or his decision to come off then? What, how did it all work? He said, well, I was thinking about making a change because he could see the performance. But he said, you know, we observed the game and we saw in some moments he struggled. He didn't track back, which is true, and couldn't defend the box anything like he did used to do in the first 25 minutes. He said, we have an ongoing discussion, and so we knew that Carlos is not in his best shape.
Mm.
But you need to give the boy the game time he needs to develop to get his shape back. And that's something we are responsible for. And then last but not least, he says, we need to take care of his health, and we are all sticking together to try and help him. Now, that's quite a lot for a manager to talk about. And I think the last few weeks, I've been guessing, a lot of Brighton fans have been guessing and wondering what's going on.
It's difficult, right? Because we're talking about a human being here, isn't it? But that would strike to me that it's not physical health, that it potentially is mental health. Could and be. That actually this is a young kid who's struggling to be in his own mind right now.
And
I think we forget that. You know, mental health plays a massive role in these players' lives, especially when they're playing their lives out in the media.
Yeah.
Look, I, it might not be, but I read in between the lines as to what Hurst has said there, and that's what I got out of it. But again, I'm on the outside.
No, look, I agree. Look, I think the manager realises that he had to come out and say something.
Yeah.
And I think he's shown a lot of support there for the player. And I think I'm going to probably stop talking about it now, and I'm going to say, you know what, let them get on with it and let us see. I think any supporter would support Carlos Baleba and say, look, we're there to help you. We're not booing you. We're not doing anything like that. We know what type of great player you are. And if you're struggling, that's it. So be it. We'll support you, and hopefully you'll get back to it. What I would say when I talk about people struggling, and this is my final thought on the whole thing, is of our sort of front four, five players, our starting 11 that we would have had last season, this season, we've only got Yankuba Minta, who is any sort of form. So we've got Welbeck, who is almost non-existent at the moment.
Yeah.
Jorginho Rutter is okay. He's getting there, but he didn't have a great game on Saturday. Karuma Toma has fallen off a cliff as well at the moment. His work rate's great, but he is just not...
Got moments, though. In the highlights reel that I saw of that game, there was still, like, he was still skipping past players. He was still in position. I mean, granted, he's probably not hitting the heights that he was before.
That's the point. So having known the level that Matoma can get to and the amount of time that he can have the ball for and get and make something happen, Herzl's style does rely on three or four great players at the top doing something to get away from their players.
Yeah.
And at the moment, we just don't have any players in form apart from Minte. So something's going to have to change. We're going to have to either play through it. I would argue that in particular, it's the first time I think I watched on Saturday where I thought to myself, and I said it out loud, Matoma needs to come off. Matoma needs to actually get off that pitch, rest up, do something different, change his perspective, whatever.
Yeah.
We need to be able to have somebody else in that place. Tommy Watson's on the bench. You've got to give him a go at some point. So, look, we'll see. But there are three or four players in that attacking side of our team that are just not playing well. And it's all happening at the same time, including Baleba now as well. And, you know, it's a rough time for us, but we still got a point. And we've still got 5 points. Yes, it's not a great start.
There's six teams that have had a worse start.
Exactly. I still don't have any concern around sort of the dreaded R word or anything like
Make
that.
Make you 5 games in nil.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
I think we've just got to be a bit patient. And at some point in the next few months, I'll sit down and I'll talk a bit more about Herzl's tactics in a bit more detail, because at the moment I'm still not sure if it's working or not when you've got so many players, individuals that are just not in form. So look, that was it. Spurs 2, Brighton 2, we move on, we took a point, and that's just the way it is.
Neil, I still say Brighton 2, Tottenham 2 is a good point for Brighton, as that would have been a good point for Palace if it was the other way around.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any reason to be annoyed about that at all.
Okay, mate. We'll take a break there. We'll see you in a mo. Welcome back, everyone. This is Seagull Eagle.
It is, Neil. It is.
We have one other little game to talk about.
Yeah, the one that I've completely forgot about because it felt like a million years away.
Yeah, but officially it was a double game week. So was it last Tuesday?
Yeah, Tuesday night we kicked off our Carabao Cup campaign.
Yes.
We finally got involved in that competition. It was a London derby against Millwall.
The Millwall.
Yes, it was.
Was there any kung fu kicks this week?
No, there wasn't. But I mean, it was a pretty feisty one on the pitch though. I'm surprised more people didn't come out of it injured, to be fair. Yeah. It's always, I mean, they were... Bearing in mind, we'd just come out of the Battle of Sunderland, we spoke about last week, where their defence were just, you know, there was cuts and bruises all over the place. And Millwall was, it was a heavy one, I think.
Okay.
It was a heavy one. Look, four changes. We handed debuts to Walter Benitez, the goalkeeper.
Oh, yes, yes.
And also JD Canvo.
Oh, okay. I was interested to see how he did.
Yeah, he came in defence and started.
Right.
Both of them did really well, actually.
Okay,
Benitez had a brilliant game. We'll talk about that later. And Canvo looks every bit the player that I've read that he is, albeit a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
You get a feel of a player, like by the way they hold themselves, by how they can weight a ball, by the passing technique, their movement, all of that. And he just felt every bit right for us in that system, and I think he's going to be brilliant. So when Gaye does go, because he is going to go, regardless of who else we sign, I feel very good about the fact that this kid is sat there ready to go.
Okay.
I'm quite comfortable with that. So as well, we made a few other changes as well. Borna Sosa came in, and also Romain Essé.
Oh, okay. He started, did he?
This is the Romain Essay that I made the brash and bold statement in my season predictions that he was going to be...
Breakout star.
The breakout...
Yeah, I remember.
...star.
How did he do, Andy?
Let's maybe rename that to breakdown star. it didn't go well, mate. It really didn't go well. You know that thing where you go, like, trust the manager? Like, why is this kid not getting game time? And all the Palace fans and a lot of the ones sat around me... each week, like, give SA a chance, you know, like, you see him warming up on the pitch, doing all these skills and all that, and you're like, mate, he could bring something to the team. And it's like, yeah, this kid's a really talented player, but does he fit the system?
So
will he play for the team?
Okay, so that's one of my questions. When you said, does he fit the system? So system-wise, obviously you kept your normal formation, so presumably he was one of the two just off the striker?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
He was, and... I really saw this as, do you know what? This is the start of something that could be quite positive for him. Mm-hmm. His chance to impress, as it were. And he just, I don't know, how do I put this? He looked like a boy that has so much potential, but just playing in the wrong team.
Oh, okay.
That's what my situation was here. I think he's so keen to make an impression. You can see that he was trying, but just completely lacked... I don't know, like the discipline, the composure to play our system. It's
right.
I don't know, it's like looking at a kid in the classroom who's been off sick for 2 weeks trying to take part in a debate that he doesn't know about.
But I mean, that's half the issue, isn't it? If you're not going to play him, he's not going to learn the system. It's a bit of a double-edged sword.
I mean, he's there in training though, and I think this is the point, which is that there's Glasner's philosophies and Glasner's ways of playing, which clearly he isn't abiding by, and so much so that he wasn't able to break away in our normal pace that we would normally do,
right?
He was holding up the ball, and there was opportunities for that quick break, and he just wasn't seeing them, right?
Okay.
And then he was trying skills that he shouldn't have been trying in places, shouldn't have been trying them, losing possession and unsuccessfully taking on players. So much so... that an overplayed pass on the edge of the penalty area provoked Glasner to rip off his jacket and launch it towards the backroom staff. That's how angry Glasner got. And bearing in mind, Glasner's quite a reserved guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where he was at, right?
Okay.
Which was, I've given this boy a chance. What are you doing?
Right,
I've got a quote from Glasner about him, which is interesting. It says, "You need to be ready with the basics and then you can show off your skills. The challenge we have for Romain, get the basics right to show his skills.
Mm.
With just the skill, you get punished and lose too many balls in the Premier League." I think that sums it up quite well. "If a player doesn't do this, they can't play.
No player plays for Oliver Glasner. Every player plays for the team. You have jobs in and out of possession. Every system works if you do those, right? Yeah. And I think this is the point, out of possession, SA wasn't in the place that the players that play in his position would be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't working as hard off the ball than he should have been doing.
Got it.
So I don't think we're going to be seeing SA too much in quite a while. And my prediction is actually, I think he'll be off somewhere in January.
Okay.
So look, apart from that though, just to very quickly go over it, I think Jeremy Pino had quite a few early chances. Mm-hmm. I also thought, when you take into account that SA was having a stinker, Pino, from my opinion, watching that game, I don't think he did particularly much better. Apart from the fact that Pino looked good on the ball, but he kept on getting pushed off the ball far too easily. He spent a lot of time on the floor looking for fouls that weren't there, losing possession, taking shots from the halfway line. Again, needs to adapt. So with them two on the pitch, you can see why we were struggling.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, I got you.
At half-time, Neil, I was genuinely bored. I'm not going to lie to you. I was genuinely bored. And this is what I meant. Well, you know, we talked about this, about the two games. Mm. Like, I was just concerned that our sloppiness, lack of composure, genuinely would mean an early exit for us in the cup, and we actually wanted it, right? You could see that Glasner's made them changes because he felt like he wanted to give people a chance.
Yeah.
But you can see why he doesn't normally, and it just didn't feel like the normal Palace.
Okay.
Obviously, SA got subbed off, and I could imagine that went down well in front of, obviously, the Millwall fans as well. Mm. And here was a glimmer of hope. Uche came on for the second half. A clear improvement immediately, right?
Okay.
And this is a guy who's only, I mean, he must have gone to, what, 5 or 6 training sessions now since he signed. An instant improvement. And I would say the spark we were missing, he made an instant impact and, like, had a spell of pressure after that half time. He won a few set pieces, a few attempts on goal. He just looks strong. He looks threatening. And also, you don't mess with him. He's a big lad, right? He's a big lad, but he's also got the skill and the pace to go with it, which is what I like. Very Mateta-esque, actually.
Sounds like a fun player to watch.
Mate, if you can imagine Mateta that could also play really strongly in that attacking midfield position as well.
Right.
You've got someone that could play as Mateta and hold that ball up and make the break, but also supply Mateta. Yeah. I think we've got a good sign in there. Anyway, look. After a couple of close shaves from Millwall, it was Palace that took the lead with a Chris Richards goal, which was kind of like a rebound from a corner. Nothing particularly special.
I saw that, yeah.
I think I didn't particularly celebrate that goal. It was more of a relief, actually, Neil. You know where we're at, right? Because I was so bloody bored, mate.
Of course,
I was like, what is going on here? I think, it looked like we were unconvincingly heading towards the next round, which I, to be fair, was quite content with, given the run of fixtures.
Didn't quite go to plan, though, did it?
And then, of course, in the 91st minute, Ryan Leonard made it 1-1. Then we seemed to perk up a little bit. Even though there was a late run from Millwall, the defence held up, right? Mm. They did hold up. But with seconds left, Mateta was 6 yards out, Neil. 6 yards out. It just needs to tap it
in. Surprised me, I have to be honest. I didn't expect that. For all the world, that ball goes to Mateta. Of all the players, I was expecting that straight in the net.
I was already celebrating because I saw it happening. Yeah. I was already up and I'd sit back down again.
I was celebrating once he missed. It was quite funny.
Well, look, I mean, look, penalties it was, right? And here's the truth. I sat there with my son and I said to him, I was like, prepare yourself, mate, because I didn't feel like we had the momentum going into that penalty shootout. Mm. I really didn't. And then obviously we lost the toss on the penalties. It went that we were doing it, although it was in front of our family stand. There wasn't a particularly large amount of people in that family stand. And obviously the Millwall supporters were right down that end as well. So look, we won't go through it all, but what I will say is that we redeemed ourselves heavily, and Benitez, in his debut for us, had an absolute blinder. He saved 2 penalties. Bearing in mind, he'd already had a decent game anyway.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we had, Mateta, Richards, Deveni and Kamada all scored what I would class as genuinely convincing penalties.
I watched the penalty shootout and I was annoyingly impressed by the quality of the penalties.
One interesting fact here is that Benitez had that game-winning performance, saved 2 of the penalties, did it all with a dislocated finger.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
He got injured during the game and he went down. I can't, don't quote me on this, I can't remember the exact time in the game, but it was somewhere during
early second half.
Right.
The medics came on, whole "you all right" thing, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm all right. I'm going to carry on," you know, blah blah blah. Didn't think anything else of it. Got to after the game, and then we found out he was injured with a dislocated finger. And he played through the whole... So them saves he made, imagine getting hit by a ball with a dislocated finger.
Yeah.
Oh, but I mean, what a hero. So I think, look, all in all, truthfully, one of our worst games. Not as bad as the Fredrikstad game, but as we said earlier, mate, it doesn't have to be pretty as long as the result goes your way.
Yeah.
I do believe we got some kind of buy or pass from the gods that night. But it would have been an embarrassing one. It really, really would have been. But we got through it, and I think our experience paid off. Here's to the next round.
Do you know what the most exciting part, being a football nerd, do you know what the most exciting part of watching the Palace-Millwall game was for me?
Go on.
The corner flags.
Now I've heard about this. Yeah, go on.
It's the first time I'd noticed. But yeah, being a football nerd, right, the corner flags at Crystal Palace, at Selhurst Park, are now triangular.
Yeah.
The flags themselves are now triangular. They are not rectangular. And there's a reason for that. For anyone that doesn't know, it's not a rule as such. It's a tradition.
Yeah.
And the tradition is that all corner flags should have rectangular flags on the top of them, unless you win the FA Cup. And if you win the FA Cup, you have the right to have a triangular one. It's just like a little thing. It's like...
It's a little quirk, isn't it?
It's like when international teams win the World Cup or something, they put a little star or something on their shirts and all those sorts of things. Yeah, you get triangular corner flags. And I noticed that Selhurst Park now has triangular corner flags.
Yeah, and it's a lovely little thing.
It just reminds you every game.
Mate, it's such a lovely little thing. And there's very few teams that have got that, which is just something we can always hold on to. I don't know whether... Can you keep that now?
That's it. You won, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what I'm saying. It's just a lovely little memento of this situation. So
every time we see it go flying on the boot of Mateta. By the way, he kicked a corner flag at West Ham and didn't get booked, which was a relief.
Did the corner flag fall out?
No.
Then that's why he didn't get booked.
Because it was put in properly. Let's hope that we end up with an additional seagull eagle day in the next round. I mean, that'd be brilliant. Because, by the way, I think our...
Not the next round, the final.
Oh, I mean, that'd be even better.
Wouldn't that be amazing? A League Cup final, Crystal Palace.
I do believe that
Albion.
One of the official seagull eagle days, it was announced this week, got moved.
Oh, I did notice that. Yeah. We'll have to talk about that nearer the time.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, you're through to the next round. Brighton are yet to play. So we've got Barnsley on Tuesday evening of this week coming.
Would that be the Barnsley nil that has sat sixth in League One?
Correct.
Should be an absolute breeze.
Absolutely, it should be. Yeah. Mm. Did you not listen to the first 40 minutes of me talking on this podcast? Yeah,
mate, we just struggled with Millwall. Yeah, come on.
No, look, it's obviously not going to be easy because it's away. Any team playing away is going to be more difficult than you expect. But I think it's going to be tougher than Oxford, ironically. I really do. Barnsley are in pretty good form. They've had a pretty good start to the season. But of course, I expect Albion to win. They expect to win.
Thing is, it's a cup final for them, isn't it, though? I know it's not, but it is, right? The big boys come to town and don't forget, for the teams in League One, right, the cameras come to town.
Yep.
So it's going to be on TV to impress.
Absolutely. Look, I expect some changes. Hopefully it's going to be a very similar team to the one that played in the last round against Oxford. So I'm hoping to see Buscagli. I'm hoping to see... Tommy Watson again, and maybe Simas will start because he's been on the bench the last few games, which suggests to me he's fit now and ready. And maybe we might even see a lesser spotted Kostoulas. We'll have to see. But whichever team plays, I expect us to win.
Dare I ask you, Neil?
Go on, mate.
Can I have a score prediction, please?
For that game?
For that game.
I think I can't see us keeping a clean sheet because we haven't kept one this season yet, apart from the Oxford game last round. And Oxford were clearly the worst team I've ever seen. So I'm going to say 3-1 to Brighton.
Do you know what? That is ridiculous because that was what I was going for. Yeah. And I'm not even joking. 3-1 is what I think will happen. Yeah. And I don't think it'll be too much of a test for you.
We will see. Good luck to the Albion. Then we've got... the two games, the League Premier League games, next weekend. So we've both got nice easy games.
All I can say, Neil, is I don't think that next week's podcast potentially could be quite as chirpy as this one.
So you've got the champions. But you're at home, aren't you? You're at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, I'll be going to it. So it's Liverpool Palace, yeah. Or Palace Liverpool, if we can say it correctly. Yep. But I think, look, one positive for Palace is it's the first week for as long as I can remember that we haven't got a midweek game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that, as Glasner says, that is a positive in terms of that we're playing midweek games. You can't see it as a negative. You can't moan about it. It's the reward. However, the reward for us this week is that the players get a bit of a rest. And I think that's why Mateta's, you know, potentially not firing on all cylinders, all the other bits and pieces. So hopefully that extra bit of respite will give us a bit more of an edge and give us a bit more to focus on. We've got, I think the other way to look at it is not just about the players' performance, but it's also about the fact that you've got a whole week to focus on the tactics for that one game as opposed to trying to, you know, work out two games in that period. Do you get what I mean?
Focus on it. I do. And I think the other thing you need to consider is, if you remember right at the beginning of this season, Liverpool started their campaign with Bournemouth. And Bournemouth, big counter-attacking team, they almost got a point. They almost got 3 points.
Yep.
They played really well. And that type of style is exactly going to be what's happening on Saturday with you lot. So,
And they don't normally do particularly well against us with that style. Don't forget, obviously, we did technically beat them, albeit at penalties, before. So
all I would say is I think the other thing you need to consider is the fact that Liverpool have got a game this week, like Brighton have.
Yep.
So they've got Southampton in the League Cup, and they'll want to win that, obviously. So there will be a few tired legs out there come next weekend.
Yeah, and look, I'm not being doom-mongering about it. I'm not being negative about it. I just think, you know, like when you go on one of these wonderful runs, and it's a run beyond any Palace fan's dream right now.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
And you just kind of, I've been looking at this fixture list, Neil, and I've been going, oh, Liverpool's coming up. Because you just think, and let's be honest, right, you come out of Liverpool with a draw, and you celebrate it, right?
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
where we're at right now. Yeah.
What is your prediction?
Oh, in my head, I would love the dullest, most boring, crappiest 0-0 draw that I've ever seen. Mm. And I mean, I'm quite happy to fall asleep during watching that game. I don't care how bad it is, as long as we frustrate them and don't let any of them ridiculous multi-£1 million superstars get through our back line, I'm quite happy. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm also dreading it. Bearing in mind, Sarr's out, Pino's out, so I would imagine it's going to be Kamada and Deveni. So if you think about from our perspective, creativity, whilst Kamada is getting better at playing them balls through and weighting them and all the other bits and pieces, we've lost a couple of our playmakers there, bit of creativity. So I would say a 0-0 draw or a 1-1 draw.
What do you think's going to happen? What's your prediction?
1-1.
1-1, okay.
But just bear this in mind, though. If we win...
Oh, God, here we go.
No, if we win.
Yeah.
Not saying we will. I've just explained that I think it's going to be a dull draw. If my maths is correct, and it might have changed since the game this afternoon, that could put us in second, potentially third.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
If everything else goes our way. And wouldn't that be a nice podcast for you to compete in with me next week?
Oh, I don't care, mate. 6 games in, I don't care where you are in the league. It only matters when it comes to the end of April, doesn't it, really?
You're absolutely right, but not if you're in that position. But yeah, no, that would be lovely. But okay, let's see what happens.
Okay.
You're away
at
Stamford Bridge.
Stamford Bridge, where we've done so well in the past.
Is that sarcasm? I genuinely don't know, mate.
Yeah, okay, well, last season, we lost 4-2 there. Crazy game. It was 3-2 in the first half. It was a really crazy game. But look, to be honest, against Chelsea recently, in recent history, at home, we've done really well. Last season, we beat them 3-0 at home. And that we played them in the FA Cup last season at home as well and beat them 2-1. So we've done really well. Away... yeah, a little bit harder. So 4-2 last season. Season before that, 3-2 we lost. They're relatively close affairs. They're relatively
high-scoring fixtures, though.
Open in that sense as well. But the way we're currently playing, I honestly don't know. I can't. It's really difficult for me to sit here and predict, whereas you've got such a stable starting 11. You know your formation, you know the way you play, all that sort of stuff. It's, you know, the Spurs game this weekend has tossed up the idea that we might be now counter-attacking team suddenly, or we might... I just don't know. I haven't got a clue what we are at the moment. So if everything's equal and we play in our usual style, our traditional style, let's call it that way, I think it will be... I think there'll be goals, and I think, though, that we will probably not get anything from the game. I would be incredibly happy again with a point if we get that. I think the worry is that... My last point on this is that the worry is that we are currently, not that I'm worried about the league position, but if you think about the points that we have rather than where we are in the league, we have played five and obviously we've got 5 points.
Yeah.
Not great in that sense. So if we have played six and we've still only got 5 points, then that's going to leave us pretty much down the bottom at the moment. And again, I'm not worried about from a perspective of right now, it's more a mentality and what that does to people.
No, of course. I mean, this time last year, you were sat in seventh with 9 points, right. 2 wins and 3 draws.
Right, okay.
If you look at year on year. Mm. So and again, look, we're talking small margins, right? You're 4 points away from where you were this time last year. So you put it in perspective, it's like, you ain't, I mean, come on. 2 weeks worth of good form and then, you know, you're on the opposite end of the table already.
Yeah, it's 2 goals difference, basically. You know, we don't let one in against Fulham and we don't let one in own goal against Spurs and suddenly we're in a completely different position.
Oh, mate, you look at it from Palace perspective, if that goal hadn't been disallowed at Chelsea, we'd be sat in second now.
There you go.
It's mad.
And that's where we are at this moment. And so there is no reason for me to get too upset or too frustrated. And I have to be patient, and I beg Albion fans, they're usually a pretty level-headed lot, most of them, I beg Albion fans to be patient. We've got to see this out and see where we get to, because if we can get our good players firing, then who knows what will happen.
Yeah, and do you know what is wonderful, right, is that you look at the Premier League at the moment, you look at who's down in the bottom three, right, just to kind of summarise here, I think it's going to be a hell of a season, mate, because I think there's going to be some interesting teams that are threatening for that drop as the league table goes on. I think the relegated teams seem to be doing very well and playing the big boys well.
Yeah, Sunderland currently sitting seventh, mate. The ones that I said were doing well. Unbelievable.
It's mad. And then you've got some big boys like West Ham, who are...
Villa.
Villa, have they scored yet?
Yeah, they scored one today on Sunday as we went to recording.
Oh, I missed that. Yeah. Okay, but I mean, that's the thing, you see, and this is what I think is just going to make for such a wonderful season this year, because whilst it's funny now, it won't be funny for them later on in the season as it starts getting closer and you get to the point where the likes of Villa and West Ham could get relegated and some of them, like the teams that have come up, might end up in the top 10. I mean, Christ, you just don't know, right?
It's going to be a hell of a season.
Exactly.
And we're going to be here every week, mate, talking about it. Can't wait.
Absolutely. And neither of us are involved in a relegation fight quite yet. So that's what we've got to hold on to right now. So look, there we go. That's it for another episode of Seagull Eagle. Thank you so much for listening. I don't know how you do it, literally.
Just press the button, mate. It's easy. You press play and it works.
Ah.
Make sure you follow the show so you don't miss the next episode when it drops. And we'll be back next week, of course, to review the Brighton v Chelsea and the Palace v Liverpool.
And don't forget, find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook and X. Interact with us because we want some friends. And also search Seagull Eagle and get the conversation started.
You could drop us an old-fashioned email if you want at seagulleaglepodcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you next week. Until then, Eagle!
Seagull!